the Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. As several proposals to cut or eventually eliminate Oklahoma state personal income tax continues to make their way through the state legislature, a number of state economists have spoken out on the economic analysis behind the tax cut proposals. That analysis from the Oklahoma Council on Public Affairs and conducted by former Reagan administration economist Arthur Laffer, man behind the Laffer curve, suggests that cutting or eliminating the state personal income tax would spur major growth in our overall gross state product, in short, the Oklahoma economy. Well, next Thursday, the Oklahoma Policy Institute will host a public forum where a group of economists will present a panel discussion, Abolishing Oklahoma's Income Tax, Silver Bullet or Fool's Gold. They'll discuss the methodology and conclusion of the OCPA proposal. We'll also focus on what the implications of doing away with the income tax could be on state public finances, economic development, and the overall economy of the state. That event is free and open to the public. It takes place next Thursday at the Oklahoma History Center. I'm joined by one of the economists who's expected to speak, Dr. Jonathan Wilner, professor and chair of the Department of Economics and Finance at Oklahoma City University. He joins us today by phone. Dr. Wilner, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for calling.
You've written a brief of economist Arthur Laffer's economic analysis on eliminating the state income tax. Well, I'd like to get to that, but before we do that, I'd like to take a step back and look at this overall philosophy of eliminating state income taxes as being a boon to state growth. How do proponents of this idea expect to fund state government without the income tax and without raising state taxes or property taxes? Can you give us a little sense into the philosophy of this?
It all derives from a couple of beliefs. One is in the Laffer curve, which I do believe has some value. And the other one is sort of an excessive belief in the existence of perfectly competitive markets everywhere at all times. And you take those two together, and basically you get a simplistic notion that government bad, business good. very simplistic notion, and basically false. The question is the levels, and that's what they never get to is, okay, if you don't like this level of government, what level of government activity do you like? And their response is always less.
And, you know, when you look at a stimulus to an economy, and, you know, we've certainly had the debates on the federal level, but would eliminating state income tax really provide that much growth to the government? And that's taking aside what it does for state government as far as funding state government. But, you know, and we have these debates on the federal level. I would think it'd even be less on a state level.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of if-thens, you know, what are you going to fund and to what extent are you going to fund it? Certainly there are things in the government we could probably be better off without to a certain extent, but there's also some things that the Oklahoma state government doesn't do that we should probably do more of. So overall net expenditure, I would expect that the state would be better off with well-advised, well-thought-out, well-planned increases in spending in specific areas.
But,
however,
yeah,
that's not the Laffer view, which is government bad, business good.
Mm-hmm. And yet, the state government does have to fund, I think almost all people would say, you have to fund public safety, you have to fund education, you have to fund some sort of safety net, you have to fund transportation infrastructure for business, if nothing else. There's about five or six areas that you have to fund. Now, how do proponents of this idea of eliminating the income tax expect to have that same level of funding for those, what most people would agree are essential items, without the income tax and without raising sales taxes and property taxes?
I don't think they believe that all of those activities should be funded, for one. They're put limits on, they'll, you know, fund public education to a certain extent, public safety to a very minimal extent, social safety net they're probably opposed to. I can't speak for them. But in general, they're opposed to a great deal of state activities. They don't feel that this is the purview of the state and that we'd all be better off without it. I don't believe that, but I think that is a fairly accurate representation of their beliefs.
The rhetoric, though, at this point, as these various bills are making their way through the legislature, is that the growth from the elimination or serious reduction of the income tax will provide extra revenue, and I'm having a hard time seeing that.
Oh, absolutely not. That's a complete canard. It's just foolishness. The Laffer curve rests on sort of an optimal tax rate, above which tax revenues go down and below which tax revenues go down. So the question is, where are you on this curve? And none of that looks at what you're actually going to need to fund. In order to fund a greater population across time, what we need is more tax revenue across time. So, yes, it has to go up. If you slow down that rate of growth in tax revenues, you're going to slow down the rate of growth of government services, assuming you have a balanced budget and don't want to go too far into debt. So I don't think they really take consideration of that, because they really do want to see less government expenditure. And one way of assuring that is, if you have a balanced budget state, is if tax revenues go down, they must spend less.
Right.
I believe that's their end objective.
But in their rhetoric, the proponents of cutting the income tax says that we'll see overall state growth. And I think their belief, or at least what they're trying to suggest, is that that overall growth will fund not through increases of rates of sales taxes or corporate income tax, but the fact that those revenues will grow, that will cover the elimination of the personal income tax. Is there any economic basis for that?
Pipe dreams, yes. We all have pipe dreams. And I was just looking at it. As I recall, they maintain the growth will almost compensate,
yeah,
but not quite compensate. Almost, 1 or 2% less each year, compounded across time, rather significant changes. These have been tried at the federal level for decades, and they didn't work in the recent case. There's a constant reference to the Kennedy-era tax cuts, which did this. Of course, what you're looking at was a top marginal tax rate of 90%. And when they cut that, that helped. But we're nowhere near that now. So we're on the other part of the curve. The idea that the growth will be sufficient is rather interesting, because some of the growth that's contained in their appendix is associated with population. So if you looked at revenue per person, if revenue grows like they say it would, well, it's kind of ignoring that that's less per person and therefore less revenue to expend per person.
Right.
The other part of it is they just completely ignore the role of state services in attracting businesses.
Mm-hmm. And give us a sense of how important that is.
Well, one of the ones, this is kind of hard on the state of Oklahoma, and I hate doing this repeatedly, but it's true. In many state comparisons, Oklahoma is at the bottom when we need to be at the top, and we're at the top when we need to be at the bottom. We're a low per capita income state and a high illegitimate pregnancy state. We're a high stroke rate. So we need to do some things. And one of the areas that we're really weak in is public infrastructure and public education. Mm-hmm. And the solution to those is not the continual beating on teachers. The reality is, what works is really good teachers, less bureaucracy, and less mandates from states to buy certain things from businesses that are one-size-fits-all package. When you get down to effective labor force, reliable infrastructure, very unsexy things, then you start having positive effects on the economy. Simply cutting the tax rate, I'm sorry, but when Boeing moved from the state of Washington to Chicago, it wasn't because of a low personal income tax rate in Chicago.
Well, when I look at this, this seems like this is an experiment in supply-side economics on a state level.
Yeah, I mean, that's the driving force behind supply-side economics. It was driven by the Laffer curve and a lack of interest in what it might actually look like on the ground.
Well, you've written a brief of Arthur Laffer's economic analysis on this idea of eliminating the state income tax and how it will provide for more growth. And a lot of other economists have been looking at it as well, and they're seeing some serious flaws in it. What are, in your mind, are the most serious flaws in the analysis?
Oh, they're legion. What the heck, I'll say it. When I started reading it, to me it kind of read like an Onion article. really, it was just ludicrous, especially for somebody that has a PhD in economics. The sort of things that I'm going to be dealing with are the idea that you can simply use different time frames in the same article to say you're comparing things. So their start date for a table might be 2000 or 2001 or 2003, and then they might end at 2010 or they might end at 2009. So they're constantly shifting the start and end dates. There's no reason in the data to do that, because the data is absolutely available all the way back, in some cases, into 1920s. So why would you choose different data start and end points except to make a point that is better made by eliminating certain items?
Right. I noticed that. I noticed that in the comparisons to Alaska's growth in income over the last 7 or 8 years without the income tax, and that sort of neatly coincides with when oil is just shot through the roof.
Well, that was another one that, if you look at their sort of top 10 states that have grown, let's see, Wyoming, oil, I used to roughneck in Wyoming, Oklahoma, I mean, all these, the oil price shocks really matter in Oklahoma. And you can see that in our state GSP. And it matters in most of those other states as well. Mm-hmm. And that's completely off the board. This is called omitted variables bias in the trade. And what they've done, especially their appendix, is atrocious in terms of omitted variable bias.
And what you're saying is you basically can't make comparisons if you're comparing an apple to an orange instead of a different apple.
It's more like an apple to a car. I mean, it's just ludicrous. And there's so much that affects these other states. And to do this sort of work as they did it is just, I think, it's sophistry. It's not even rhetoric. There's no truth in it whatsoever.
My guest today is Dr. Jonathan Wilner, a professor and chair of the Department of Economics at Oklahoma City University. He'll be part of a panel discussion with a variety of economists looking at abolishing Oklahoma's income tax, silver bullet or fool's gold. This will take place this coming Thursday at 1 o'clock at the Oklahoma History Center in Oklahoma City, as a variety of economists from several state universities, as well as OCU and Chamber of Commerce officials, will be sort of talking about this idea of abolishing or greatly reducing the state personal income tax. And you have about four bills, I think, moving through the legislature. One goes from the Mike Mazzei bill, which is very small reduction, or I say small reduction, it's almost 10% over 2 years in the personal income tax rate, to some very, 50% to, outright roads to eliminating the income tax. Of these plans, I was wondering, have you looked at them, and which one has the most interest to you of all these plans?
Well, they're all interesting because they all need to be removed. It just make no sense. Reduction of a relatively low income tax rate in a state that desperately needs to really fund an awful lot of basic infrastructure and improve things is just the wrong way to go if what you want is substantial growth. This is particularly interesting that most people are concerned about their own income, not the state as a whole income. California's income is much larger than Oklahoma's. What we're usually interested in is a per capita income, and Laffer, et cetera, completely avoid that issue. And I really think that if you spend money wisely in the state, you could spend more and improve growth considerably more than any cut in income tax will do.
Yeah. One of the things I've been trying to get my head around is this idea that if the income tax is removed, that, consumers will automatically spend that money and stimulate the economy. I think, one thing, when we do send our tax in, government does appropriate that money. It does spend the money, which should help the economy. Whereas if I am not paying income taxes and I take that money that comes back to me, I might save some. I might spend it out of state. I might spend some of it in state, out of state. It doesn't have the same effect, does it?
It doesn't necessarily have the same effect, but there's a good chance that a fairly healthy portion of in-return tax will be spent in some fashion. There's a chance it'll go to pay down existing debt, but that's for the last 15 years up until the last two. It's not been the American habit. We just sort of spend it. But remember where this tax revenue is coming from. It's not coming from the median and lower household. It's mostly the upper 50% that are actually paying in on net to the state tax. Those are the people who are likely to actually be saving. So you give them a bump more money, and they're not going to consume it. They're in all likelihood going to invest it. Well, that's fine. When economists talk about investment, we mean building new plant and equipment, not trading ownership, which is what the stock market is. And you need the plant and equipment to actually expand the economy. If those folks actually did put the money into creating new plant and equipment on the ground in Oklahoma, then it would have the positive effect that we might have had otherwise. But there's no assurance that they're going to do that. After all, the city, Oklahoma City, has spent a tremendous amount of tax money to attract businesses. They funded Bass Pro, they gave Dell, they've even given Continental Petroleum some benefits by coming here. A couple of million dollars here, a couple of million dollars there. And I haven't noticed that these entities need any extra money as it is.
Mm. One of the other things most of the plans do is look at exemptions, deductions, and tax credits. Are there any good ideas there in your mind?
Yeah, some of it are not too popular. In general, every time you put in an exemption for whatever purpose, you distort the heck out of the economy. So I tend to be opposed to them in general. I don't see any net benefit. Obviously, certain individuals and certain entities benefit from each and every one of these. But taken collectively, they could probably all go away and we'd be better off. It would take a while to straighten it out. I particularly object to any benefit going to a very profitable entity. It's sort of an infant industry argument that countries tried for a long time. That, you know, if you help this company out, it will grow and eventually it won't need the benefit. And the problem is you can never pull that benefit. They never really grow up.
And, of course, a lot of our credits are open-ended. They're transferable, especially the industry credits. We've seen the horizontal drilling moratorium that was in place for a couple of years. Expected to cost $150 million. It's going to be close to double that. Over the past few years where it wasn't given away. So there aren't really good limits on those credits either.
No, of course not. Certain individuals benefit. Do you want a limit on your benefit? I mean, come on. This is about ability to get what's good for you. That's what these tax credits are for.
One of the interesting proposals in one of the bills, or Senate Bill 1623, through the elimination of exemptions and credits, it actually will cause some increase in revenue for a short amount of time because it's a relatively small reduction in income tax rates, but you're eliminating a lot of broad-based exemptions, such as things we all take the personal exemption to dividend interest income exclusions, Things that we just normally expect to see on a tax form.
Yeah, well, tax simplification. Those exemptions would change. If you cut the income tax rate and simultaneously cut a bunch of these exemptions, you could have, at least on a tax revenue basis, no effect, or you might even, if the cutting the exemptions is large enough, you could actually increase revenues from those sources. The question then becomes, well, who is actually benefiting from this and in what proportion? An example would be, say, somebody look at somebody who gets $30,000 a year and has an exemption worth $1,000. So that's about one-third of his income. You took look at somebody who's earning $300,000 a year and get rid of a $1,000 exemption. It's a much, much smaller share of his income. So the $1,000 is benefit to the lower income individual, the exemption that he used to take, well, he's not going to get that exemption anymore. So that's 1/30th of his income, and it's almost irrelevant to somebody at a much higher income bracket. So it's a rather interesting way of pushing the tax burden lower.
My guest today is Professor Jonathan Wilner, the chair of the Department of Economics at Oklahoma City University. He'll be part of a panel discussion on abolishing Oklahoma's income tax, silver bullet or fool's goal, which will be taking place this coming Thursday at 1 o'clock in Oklahoma City. But it features economists from Oklahoma State, University of Oklahoma, University of Central Oklahoma, the Oklahoma City Chamber, as well as the Department of Commerce, debating this idea of abolishing Oklahoma's income tax. Now, you're an economist. What would be the best system for growth in Oklahoma? I'll just give you a chance to, the best system of taxation and policies which would attract the most growth to Oklahoma. What would be your silver bullet, if you will?
How fast do you want that growth to be and how sustainable?
Okay, that's up to you. For sustainable growth, let's say we want it to be sustainable.
We want sustainable growth. It's not simply the tax that matters, and that's something we've got to get rid of, the idea that how you tax is the only explanation. It's also how you spend. The textbook example is an old one. It's from the state of California, wherein they did introduce property taxes and income taxes and a huge amount of taxes. But in the process of doing that, they also built the highway systems, the infrastructure, and one of the best public education systems on the planet. And all of that kept working until they had a bunch of propositions that cut the taxes. They were spending intelligently for the most part. They had a great running economy, a great education system, tremendously innovative. And then they decided to cut the taxes, and because of the scale that they'd done and the variety of things they'd done, there was no way to maintain the system, and over time it collapsed. So my idea would be, if I get my choice, a reasonably progressive income tax, property taxes that actually matter, and almost no exemptions to speak of, and then put it into infrastructure and really high-quality education. And that starts at kindergarten for everybody.
So infrastructure, more spending on education. But what do we mean by infrastructure? Are we talking about roads, highways, or are we talking more?
Yes. All of the above.
Okay.
A power system that delivers reliable power, a sewer system that works, water that's clean and safe constantly and available everywhere. One of the things I'd really love to see, I think Oklahoma City is probably large enough for it, is less emphasis on roads and parking and more emphasis on really good mass transit systems.
Mm-hmm.
But simply spending more on education doesn't solve the problem. It's how you spend it. And that really has to change if you really want to have growth. I did not grow up in Oklahoma. I moved here after I got my doctorate for the job, and I had never before in my life lived in a place where the culture did not value education. There's a lot of talk about it, but when you talk about what it means, that kids are going to have to work hard on their education, and it's going to be a long, difficult path. And so when you start valuing it and start realizing that though it's not a guarantee, there's strong evidence that doing the hard thing pays off in the long run, you start getting the culture that says the hard thing is getting a university degree that matters, and by the way, there's a real possibility you won't make it. When that starts to become a real deal, then I think education will start to improve in Oklahoma. But right now, it's blame everybody but the fact that my kid's not working very hard, and I'm not helping him.
Well, we'll be interested to hear this panel discussion next week. Abolishing Oklahoma's income tax. These proposals continue to make their way through the legislature. It'll be interesting to see what the legislature comes up with. Professor Wilner, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Professor Jonathan Wilner, professor and chair of the Department of Economics and Finance at Oklahoma City University, one of several economists who will be a part of a panel discussion convened by the Oklahoma Policy Institute in a public forum titled Abolishing Oklahoma's Income Tax, Silver Bullet or Fool's Gold. That takes place this coming Thursday at 1 o'clock at the Oklahoma History Center in Oklahoma City. More information at okpolicy.org. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of our commentator on health care and medicine, Dr. John Henning Schumann.
In America, too many people die in the hospital. I don't mean that they die due to medical error or incompetence, though that's always a hot topic of discussion amongst doctors, researchers, administrators, and regulators. What I mean is that if you ask most people, they say they'd rather die at home, surrounded by their loved ones, drifting off to sleep painlessly after having had last rites administered. Feel free to plug in your religious, atheistic ritual of choice here. Why, then, do so many who want this type of death instead die medically in the hospital, undergoing painful treatment and the deprivations and degradations of medical care? The answer has both simple and complex aspects, but I'll start by sharing something that most medical professionals believe. When my time comes, the last place I want to be is in the hospital. Don't get me wrong, the hospital is a good place to work, teach, and learn, but when the Grim Reaper is calling my name, I want to be as far away from there as I can. No IVs, no needle sticks to test my blood, no waking me up to check vital signs every shift, no hospital food, no fluorescent lights, no feeding tubes, no bladder catheters, ouch, no hospital food, and for heaven's sake, no breathing machines, what we in the business call mechanical ventilators. These technologies have allowed us to extend life by keeping people breathing and metabolizing as long as the heart can pump. We can even take that over for some time with machines now. But what they don't do is keep us alive in any meaningful way. I'll admit that this is a judgment call, that how you define meaningful is the key element. Because what I think is not meaningful life, being strapped to a bunch of machines keeping me alive, is very meaningful to others. Alive is alive, no matter what people like me have to say about it. There's a big disconnect between what health professionals see and what people not in the field perceive about death. Presumably, for folks not ensconced in our world, a lot of death imagery comes from TV or the movies. The simple reasons that people die in the hospital are 1, some people prefer it, battlers to the bitter end. 2, for those who don't prefer it, they aren't empowered to do it any other way. This second group is the one for whom death in a hospital is a shame. And though we're getting better at comforting the dying, hospitals, believe it or not, are just not set up to deal with the dying process very well. Hospitals are like giant factories where all the focus is on process: diagnosing, treating, rehabbing, and discharging. Death, while a natural endpoint, is still too frequently viewed as medical failure. Nothing could be further from the truth. I'd like to empower the folks in that second group, and especially their family members and loved ones, who will be called on when the time comes to help with decision-making, to take the initiative and die at home, or in hospice, or on a mountaintop in bright sunshine. How can we do that? Verbalize what you think you want. Write it down. Share it with your family and friends. When your time comes and you have a life-threatening illness, push your doctors to be candid in their appraisal of your chances for recovery or the imminence of death. Here's the other thing. You can change your mind. If you become old and feeble and decide that you want to fight until the last breath is taken from you, you can. And in fact, this happens a lot. But having these discussions for the first time when you're at death's door is a surefire way to wind up dying in a way that you probably never envisioned. One last note. Though I and most of my colleagues want no part of hospitals when we're dying, you still have every right to come to them and use our services. We really do want to honor your wishes.
Dr. John Henning Schumann is our commentator on healthcare and medicine, a writer, physician, and associate professor of medicine at OU Tulsa, and writes the blog Glass Hospital. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent shows, you can listen online anytime at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. Just look for Studio Tulsa, and there they are. Listen on demand. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.